Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Ask the Vet. I'm your host, Beth Broom, here in the studio with the guest today is Dr. Louise Marin. Hi, Louise.
Hello, Beth.
Dr. Marin is a veterinarian at Alpine Animal Hospital and also a boarded dentist. That's very exciting. Teeth is very important. But that is actually not what we're going to talk about today. So I wanted to remind everyone, first of all, that this is a call-in show. So if you have any vet animal-related questions, please feel free to call. It doesn't have to be related to the topic we're talking about today. But, you know, certainly if you any animal-related questions at all, we're happy to take those calls. The number here is 963-2976. All right, so I think we're going to kind of touch on a hot topic today, or at least in the animal world, it's a hot topic. I'm not sure how hot of a topic it is, but there has been some recent studies about dog food and grain-free dog food and heart disease. So, Dr. Marin, do you want to get started on where the study came from?
Sure, I can give you some background on what's going on. So, dilated cardiomyopathy is a specific type of heart disease that can be present in many species, including dogs and cats. Mm-hmm. And what it is that the heart muscle gets stretched out, and so the heart gets bigger and the heart muscle gets weaker, and so it can't pump strong to move blood through the body.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, there was a situation where a lot of cats started getting diagnosed with this specific kind of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And as veterinarians started to notice this increased rise in cases, people started talking to each other about it, and one thing led to another, and it was discovered that all of these cats were eating a similar food. The food was tested. It was found to have low levels of taurine.
Okay.
Taurine is an amino acid, which is a specific type of protein that is, they call it essential because it means that the cat has to eat it in their food. They can't metabolize it or make it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it was discovered, this common solution, they started putting taurine in the food, and then cats stopped getting that heart disease.
Okay.
So fast forward 40 years, and in the past 3 to 5 years, we started noticing heart dogs getting the same heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it was first noticed by cardiologists, veterinary cardiologists.
That makes sense.
They're the ones that see dogs with heart problems.
Right.
And so an astute veterinary cardiologist at UC Davis Veterinary School started noticing that he was seeing dogs with this specific type of heart disease that aren't mm-hmm. classical. So there are certain breeds that are predisposed to it.
Right.
Doberman Pinschers.
They're the big one, I think.
Right? Yep, they're the big one. Also Great Danes.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple less popular breeds. So he was noticing these dogs coming through his door that were not classic as far as the breed predisposition with a specific heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And he started asking questions. And a lot of times in specialty veterinary groups, they have, you know, forums where they communicate with each other. So he started talking with his veterinary cardiologist friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they started saying, well, hey, I'm actually seeing some weird cases like that too. And so they started digging deeper into these patients that they were seeing. And what they all realized was that they had a common denominator of diet.
Interesting.
The type of diet they were eating.
And that looked like specifically grain-free. Was that like a certain, anything beyond that that was linking them other than the grain-free?
So, you know, I would say I am not completely well-versed in all of the details, mm-hmm. and certainly it's possible that...
And this is still a current study, right? Like they're...
Well, it's a current question for sure. So there's not just one study. There's a lot of different ways of going about trying to find what the answer is.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the one common denominator was food.
Okay.
And so when we start talking about diet, that's where the topic hot topic gets yes. hot. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. Dr. Marin's here in the studio. And the number is 963-2976. So any animal questions, it doesn't have to just be related to diet today. Please give us a call. But yeah, so it seems that people really get wound up about food. For themselves, for their pets, and you know, I know that we're saying grain free. I mean, where did the grain free, if you know the answer to this question, but when did grain free become a thing? I feel like I never knew that was important, or when it became popular and how.
Yeah, it was kind of insidious. It's been happening gradually, but with certainty over time, it's right. become this kind of major thing. And like you say, food is a really charged topic.
Yeah.
Nutrition, obviously, you know, most people intuitively understand that nutrition is at the foundation of good health.
Sure.
And we have a lot of options where nutrition is concerned, and it is influenced by ethics mm-hmm. and philosophy mm-hmm. and politics
mm-hmm.
and hopefully science.
Hopefully.
You know, because that's where we get what most Westerners would consider reliable information.
Mm-hmm.
So
I feel like the grain-free thing maybe came about when I started to feel like more people were really concerned about their grain intake. I don't know if there's a correlation in that, but it seems interesting to me that people became very aware of their grain intake and sensitivity to it. And I just personally feel like it may have sort of fell into the animal world a little bit more. I don't know if that's just my theory.
I think you're right about that, and that kind of goes back to the multiple different components of diet and nutrition that make it a emotionally charged topic.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been sometime within the last decade or so that gluten-free has really become a thing because
yeah.
doctors started to recognize it as a thing for human
mm-hmm.
health.
Right.
And so it's something that a lot of people, if they have some sort of enigmatic disease or some problem that they can't quite nail down
right.
or find a solution for, it's like, well, try going gluten-free and right. see if that helps. And it people use it for all different sorts of autoimmune disease and pain and gastrointestinal problems and really kind of anything under the sun, headaches.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, certainly that trickled over. Another thing I would say is that going back to some of these other components. So GMOs
yes.
are a big controversial mm-hmm, issue. Mm-hmm. And so certainly a lot of our crops are genetically modified organisms. And
right.
so people who desire to stay away from that, corn and wheat, which are a lot of our bigger crops because they're used to feed the millions and billions of people on the planet, have been modified so
right.
that we can produce enough food for all those people and even
right.
in excess, as well as the animals. So when you're averse to
the
GMO
yeah.
content in your food, then, you know, corn and wheat come high to the top of the list. I think it's important to realize also that although those are the really commonly talked about
grains,
Nutrients, I would say, or components of
yeah.
food, you know, certainly in different ways, but also almost every animal that's going to be in any sort of food, whether it's cattle or sheep or chickens,
right.
are
turkeys,
also
whatever, yeah.
Genetically modified in that they've been selectively bred for years and years and years
right.
by people, and their genetics have been guided and altered and
right.
manipulated by people. So
we could go deep
to try to get a food
real
that's not that contains something completely natural. And that's what people want. They want something natural. When
right.
when the bag of dog food says all natural, that's what they want to buy.
And it seems now that every bag of dog food that you see says all natural does say grain free. So I feel like now for the people that really are paying close attention to these recommendations, which we'll get into a little bit deeper, the concern is, what do I feed? How do I find a food that's not grain free? And what are those recommendations? And I don't know if you're going to want to delve into like food names today, or maybe just qualifications for an appropriate type of food to feed. And just, by the way, just a reminder, this is a call-in show, and Dr. Marin's sitting here ready and willing to take your calls about any animal-related question at 963-2976. So I guess maybe I'm jumping ahead, but do you have any specific qualifications for what a diet should look like?
Yeah, so let's do back it up for
okay.
just a second.
I tend to get ahead of myself.
Because, you know, the question is, what's the problem? What is the problem causing the problem?
That's
why
true.
Why are these diets, why are some of these dogs developing heart disease? And certainly, like you say, it is actually difficult to find a diet that's not grain-free mm-hmm. because the dog food companies have caught on to this desire, this demand in the public.
Yeah.
And so many, if not all of them, are putting products on the shelf that have on the label that they're grain-free. So
right.
if you walk down the aisle at the grocery store, you're going to have to look hard to find one that's not labeled as grain-free.
Absolutely.
So going back to what is the problem? Well, it's the short answer is we don't know.
Right.
Because taurine has looked at, that was the first thing that was looked at because that's what we back in the day found easily to be the problem with cats and fixed it. But these dogs, approximately 90% of the dogs that have been definitively diagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy have normal blood taurine levels.
Okay.
And a lot of the foods are supplemented with taurine. So that's not the simple answer in this case.
That's unfortunate. No one likes to hear that.
Yeah. So there are multiple theories out there. What is it with these foods? And I also would go so far as to say that it's not necessarily that it's grain-free that we're certain is the problem. Maybe it's not that it's lacking grains. It could be something to do with the ingredients that are added in to replace the grains.
Right.
Perhaps there's something to do with those ingredients that
right.
are blocking some metabolic process or uptake of ingredients or nutrients.
Because I was under the... So first of all, then I think we should maybe debunk the myth that you can just add taurine to any diet and you're going to be fine, because it's not the taurine component by itself solely, or even maybe at all. So let's just clarify, because I've heard people say that, well, I feed a grain-free diet, can I just add taurine? Well, that's not, as you're saying, maybe even the issue, potentially.
Not in and of itself, at
right.
least so far as evidence would suggest.
Right. So definitely don't go try to find some taurine and put it in your dog's food, because I don't think that's going to potentially fix your problem or your potential for a problem.
And just one more thing,
yeah.
just to speak to that comment, not every dog that eats a grain-free diet has heart disease.
Right, right.
So there's multiple factors at play here. You know, diet is the common denominator, but there's got to be something else about this specific set of dogs that has the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, maybe there are some dogs that do have heart disease that just haven't been diagnosed yet. But as I say, on the grocery store shelf, almost every product is grain-free, so how come every dog doesn't have heart disease? There's some individual component, and I can say that golden retrievers specifically have been found to be among the group that is most susceptible to this disease when they're eating
a grain-free diet. Okay. When we're saying, well, maybe it's not just grain-free, are there other than components or things to watch out for?
So, the most common ingredient that is put into dog food to replace grains are legumes,
mm-hmm.
which, are high in protein.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be most likely, most commonly, peas.
Mm-hmm.
Potatoes are not legumes, but they're also one of the other things that people substitute corn and wheat and rice.
Okay.
There are also other grains. There's oats and...
I've seen couscous on the list.
Quinoa.
Like...
Yeah.
I'm very...
But peas are going to be really high on the list. Peas
okay.
and other legumes. So, you know, any more... And, of course, you know, everybody... Again, then we go back to the political component of the emotional quotient of the conversation. And people get really charged about, well, which industry or which business is being most benefited by this?
Yes, I've read a lot of those types of comments on social media, which is a little bit hard to read after a while.
Well, because people get so emotional and passionate about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, peas are going to be one of the things that are most commonly put into the food to replace those ingredients.
Okay.
Soy also sometimes too.
Mm-hmm. So if your dog becomes very gassy on that grain-free diet, so, that might be why.
Yeah. So just to say, some people are going to want to speak up and say the grain-free diets aren't the problem. And it becomes then a matter of semantics. And are we calling it grain-free? Are we calling it legume inclusive?
Oh my gosh.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I get overwhelmed. I mean, I don't know. I've also read, you know, obviously, the recommendations being that you should go with a brand that has veterinary nutritionists on staff to sort of, you know, back the company and the science behind it. And then people get a little political and emotional about big business and the financial kickbacks that maybe veterinarians are getting for supporting big companies. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but I think it's funny that because certain companies maybe give new vet students a binder and a calculator with their brand on it, doesn't mean they're getting any checks from them. They just, you know, I've heard people say all sorts of interesting things.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, there's a lot of suspicion around it, and veterinarians do not get kickbacks. Certainly, as with any business, when you sell a product, it's marked up some percentage and you're going to gain some revenue from the sale of that. But a veterinarian could carry any product on their shelf that they're going to mark up slightly, just like your local pet food store does.
Exactly.
So no, we don't, there's no return from the company directly as some sort of reward for selling their product. What it is that, you know, veterinarians are scientifically trained in formal medical school. And so we look to other medical professionals and experts to guide us in our recommendations to optimize our patient's health, which is our first and foremost priority is our patient's health. You may or may not know that veterinary medicine is not a hugely
beneficial,
high paying job necessarily. But anybody that wants to point fingers and say, and certainly this, it could benefit some of our larger corporate dog food companies because the smaller ones don't have the resources to
do the science
or to pay a veterinary nutritionist to be on staff full time.
Right.
It's not part of the business plan, part of the business model. And certainly, you know, potentially some of them can make a good product. It's just that you can't get a guarantee necessarily. And also it's been brought up, well, yeah, some of these big companies also have problems with their food, and that's true as well.
Sure. I mean, nothing's perfect.
But they are going to put out a public notice and recall their food.
Right.
Because they're constantly testing it and putting it through safety trials and verifying the quality of the content. And so that's, you know, indifferent. Certainly there can be some dangers in the foods produced by these big companies, but it's more likely that you'll hear about it sooner because they're doing the rigorous testing.
Right, right. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, and just to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. I have Dr. Marin here in the studio today. We are talking about grain-free diets and diets in general, but any animal-related question, 963-2976. She's here about 10 more minutes. Okay, so to back up for the average pet owner, what are they? Okay, so they have a dog that's been eating a grain-free diet for the majority of its life. Are there any things they can do? Is there anything they can do now to, one, be aware of signs and symptoms of a potential heart problem, and two, then let's start there. Actually, what are they looking for?
So a clinical sign that an owner is most likely going to see is a change in their pet's ability to tolerate strenuous activity.
Okay.
So whereas they used to run around the block and run circles around the person while they were going around the block, they're going to maybe slow down a little bit. Maybe they're going to be seeking out shade. Maybe they're going to be getting out of breath a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
Also, at home, when they're sleeping, they might be breathing a little bit harder than you would expect a dog to when they were resting.
And I know that's particularly, the first part of what you said is particularly challenging this time of year because it is hotter. So a lot of dogs are seeking out shade. And the other thing I think I've heard people come in with these complaints and say is, well, he's getting older, so maybe he's just slowing down a little bit. You know, it's a question, but it, I think paying really close attention to your dog's routine and noticing those small details is actually really important, and not just chalking it up to age or heat, correct?
Right. Yeah, they're subtle things. So as with aging, you know, potentially joint disease could be causing a dog to slow down. So it's not just a slam dunk if they're showing these signs. And the other thing is that sometimes the dogs don't show signs until the problem is in pretty advanced stages.
Right.
So if somebody's been feeding a grain-free diet, you know, to their dog for its whole life, what you can do to find out if your dog's heart is okay is there's a variety of things. The most simple thing is just to take your dog to the vet where they'll do a complete physical exam and evaluate the quality of the heartbeat and the quality of the heart sounds and their pulses. And sometimes you can detect subtle changes or significant changes just on a physical exam that will raise suspicion.
Okay.
If the physical exam is normal, but you're still worried.
Right, because I can imagine that there are definitely people that would be very concerned and want to know for sure.
Yeah, and you can't guarantee on a physical exam that the heart is normal. So right. What you can do, the other things, there's a simple blood test that can check a marker in the blood that goes up when the heart's not moving blood as proficiently as it should.
Okay.
The end-all, be-all is an ultrasound of the heart where you actually see the thickness of the muscle wall and watch it in action.
Now, is dilated cardiomyopathy something, if caught early enough, reversible?
Yes and no. It's inconsistent. But yes, in some of these dogs, if you start supplementing taurine, which again brings us back to the question, well, how is that helping, especially even if they have normal blood levels? You know, that answer is not super clear. But by supplementing taurine and changing them to a diet that doesn't contain legumes and does contain regular wheat or grains, we've seen some recovery in some of those animals.
And I would assume that those were caught early.
I don't know the details on that.
Right. Okay. The other question in regards to that is what does dilated cardiomyopathy do to the heart, and what is the long-term prognosis for an animal that gets this disease?
Well, the long-term prognosis is guarded. If your dog is going to respond to a change in diet and potentially amino acid supplementation, then the prognosis is good.
Okay.
The heart could return to completely normal and the dog can go on and live life like nothing ever happened. But if the changes are irreversible for whatever reason, then what happens is the heart just gets weaker and weaker and the body will compensate for a while, maybe even a couple few years, depending on certain medications and other contributing factors. But ultimately, the heart just gives out and it can't get blood with its nutrients and oxygen to the vital tissues and organs.
So they would go into heart failure.
Right.
Okay. But there are medications potentially depending on the situation and the level of issue. And obviously the diagnosis done by a cardiologist or their similar. There are medications that potentially can be given to help with this problem.
Right. Help, but not cure.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, you know, to sort of wrap this up, I was under the impression that there was maybe three guidelines for when you're looking at the dog food you have. If we're not going to give names of companies, isn't there something along the lines of maybe three specific guidelines for what you want to avoid?
Yeah, it's another thing that's been criticized by certain people and groups that have something to gain by that have products that meet these criteria that have now been stated or what you should avoid.
Right.
But you can use the abbreviation BEG.
Okay.
And so they're said to be boutique diets. So these very small companies that typically, what's the word I'm looking for? They tug at your heartstrings in a certain way. They've got, you know, these
marketing.
Really beautiful packages.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the picture of the wolf on the front and big chunks of lean red meat. You know, saying that their product is better because they're a very small company and they, unlike other big dog food companies, actually care about the animals that they're feeding. And
right.
So boutique is just mainly it's referring to smaller companies.
Right.
The second letter E stands for exotic ingredients. So what some of them will also cater to is like we're talking about GMOs and some of these non-natural ingredients that people, that bigger companies might put in their food. Usually these boutique diets are putting things in like kangaroo or venison or...
I heard squid.
Squid, wild boar, some of these, you know, just things that aren't in the typical agricultural circles.
Right.
And then the last is G for grain free.
Okay. And those are the things that are recommended to avoid at this point.
Yeah. And it's not that necessarily, you know, you can't call out any specific company as bad. There is listed on the FDA website the companies and the products that are have been associated with the most cases. And so certainly I would encourage people, it's pretty easy at this point to just Google FDA and grain free, and you'll pop up the information that the FDA has recently released to the public based on the information that's reported to them by the veterinarians who are making all these diagnoses. But again, you know, the issue is very complex. It's not well understood, but there are a lot of great minds at work trying to figure it out as we speak. So just stay tuned.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Marin, for being so informative and sort of spreading the word on this. And thanks to everyone for listening to Ask the Vet. We are here every third Thursday at 4:30. So tune in for next time. All right. Have a good day.